You could say that America's gift to 21st century architecture is the McMansion, in which case Japan's is the very small home. The hottest new design craze in fashion-conscious Japan is for houses that go beyond small to tiny. We're talking 1,000 or even 500 square feet of space for a couple or even a family of four. Sound impossible? American architect Asby Brown lives and works in Tokyo. He's published a book of photographs that shows some of the best new small Japanese homes, which, he says, represent a return to the roots of Japanese housing.
Japanese homes on average were always fairly small. In the Edo period, which ended, you know, a little over 150 years ago, the average town dweller was living in about 250 square feet. They had these tiny tenements, and the entire family's living there. And that was like three quarters of the urban population.
I mean, even for small people, that is not a lot of space. Yeah,
they were always that way. And a lot of the characteristics that distinguish the better of the houses that I'm looking at in my book, certainly they're very traditional characteristics. Things like using the area under the floor for storage, putting things away. Of course, bedding was always, you know, futons, and they were always rolled up and put out of the way and making the room usable for something else. Cabinets and boxes and shelves have always had a wonderful intricacy and pure functionality in Japan. Nesting boxes and things that you can take out when you need them and then put them out of sight. Yeah. There's also one other very important thing that strikes me about many of these houses, and they're very, very modern in appearance, very, very spare, almost, you know, minimalist. And instead of having a lot of possessions on display, you know, they're doing this Japanese simplicity. And one pot, you know, one small cabinet, one beautiful treasured object, instead of having a lot of things that sort of seemed good at the time.
Well, so, it does seem to flow through all of the pictures. You look at these places
it certainly
and
does.
Think
it's
that
partly
the junk
selection
in my house would fill these houses.
Right. The junk in all of our houses would, and how can you get rid of it? And that's funny, you know, because I'm not trying to, you know, do a kind of a spiritual life advice thing in this book. It's about design. It's about sort of practicality and functionality and beauty. But speaking with the various homeowners has been really, really interesting. There's one house called the Saginomiya House, which is one of the first ones in the book. And it's a two-story house. The occupant is a widow. And she's actually, you know, well off enough that she could have built almost any kind of house anywhere she wanted, but she decided she wanted this small house, which is, you know, less than 1,000 square feet, and devoted the entire first floor to a party space. And
is that the one with a 7-foot square kitchen?
That's the one. But the thing about this woman that really made me sigh was when I asked her about her closet. This house has a small walk-in closet. And I'm thinking of my own mother-in-law. They're almost an identical age, and my mother-in-law has clothes that she's kept for 30 years but doesn't wear in her closet. She has several large closets, and they're all full. And I said, well, what about you? What do you do about the clothes? And she said, oh, I give it all away every year and buy new ones. So she, she has enough money to do that, but she gives it to charity and keeps the few things she really likes and just avoids getting the stuff she doesn't need.
What is it about these houses that makes them feel so much larger, at least in the pictures, than the square footage would seem to indicate that they are?
I'd say the technique that has the most impact in that respect is what I'd call the soft division of space. The architects have found ways to separate the different areas in these homes without building walls necessarily. Many of them are of the nature of a large open room with some raised floor area for perhaps a dining area or a kitchen, some part that has suddenly a tall but narrow atrium over it, and that is sort of delineating a particular place to sit in a living room. I see the use of quite a lot of curtains, lighting that both lends an identity to the areas, makes it clear, you know, what they're for, and also activates the space, makes it feel less confined because the light is moving through and playing off the walls, etc.
Well, there's some interesting things that they do with light. There's one that I remember, a picture of what looks like a cupboard on the wall, but the light must be behind it. It looks almost as though the box
is
floating.
That's right. I believe that's the Ambiflux house, which is a very unusual house.
Now, that's the tall, skinny one, right?
The tall, skinny one. Is that the one we're thinking of?
And
the cupboards.
So, yeah.
In the living area, yes, they have a lighting concealed behind it, and it has sort of a dual thing. Plus, the way the architect designed it, these cupboards seem to be floating. When the lights are on, it's almost like a little science fiction movie, you know, this hovering box, you know, filled with shoes on one side.
Yeah. That Ambiflux house is interesting in other ways, I think. It's tall and skinny. Floor space, and I suppose you get it, it's like rooms stacked one on top of another.
That's right. It looks more like what we call a pencil building in Japan, where the lot is only, you know, about 30 feet across. As development has proceeded in the Japanese cities, you know, they've built up, but the lots are still very narrow. And in fact, the two lower floors are rental space. One has, I think, a shoe shop in it, and the other one is some kind of gallery. You enter actually from what's the third floor, and when you go in, there's an atrium that goes up, you know, four stories. It's spectacular. There's beautiful, light, cantilevered stairs that climb the walls. It's like a medieval tower in some ways, but reinterpreted in modern terms. And, of course, the family has children, and they're running up and down these stairs. It's a couple of lovely daughters, and they're running up and down. I'm sure they're getting a lot of exercise. And all of the rooms are open to this atrium. There's no real walls, you know, separating the bedroom, etc. And the light comes from the skylight, which is the entire ceiling. I mean, the whole
thing. These things combine all to pull your eyes up so you don't concentrate on how little floor space there is.
And, you know, exactly. You don't feel the walls.
We were talking about lighting in some of these houses. They have used lighting in ingenious ways. There's one, isn't there, that has translucent walls?
That's right. That is a house called Natural Wedge, designed by Masaki Endo. And this is one of the interesting houses in terms of structure. This house is based on a steel truss work. It's a beautiful, delicate, sculptural thing, white-painted, delicate trussing all through the house and including the walls, which are sheathed in glass. Of course, at nighttime, the entire house is illuminated like a lantern. It's beautiful, but the walls are glass. And, of course, not transparent. It's translucent. And, you know, to make glass walls, you know, and have the light come through, then you have to think about a lot of other things, such as insulation. The architect spent a bit of energy hunting down appropriate materials that were translucent. He found a kind of polyester fiber fill that's in a kind of nylon sheathing, all of which is translucent. So that's what's inside the walls. It's a remarkable house, like a giant wedge, and light comes in from every side, and it makes you feel like you're floating.
You've talked about the materials that are used and the ways in which houses are stacked and about how things flow outside. There's another house I was fascinated by that essentially has one wall that looks to be removable.
That's right. The Engawa house, yes, it's a very wonderful house. It's essentially a large rectangular box, and the interior is totally free of obstructions. And one side of the house faces a garden, which is bounded on the opposite side by the parents' home. So the couple wanted to build a house to make a family compound, and both houses would share this garden. And what the architects did was make one wall completely openable by means of, you know, fairly conventional, you know, heavy-duty sliding glass doors. There's about a dozen of them, which, you know, slide back to open this wall. And the house is, you know, again, less than 1,000 square feet. It's about 845 square feet. And this family, you know, this is something I've noticed, that many of the houses have not included sofas and those kind of living room furnishings, but centered their life around a table. And this house has a remarkable table that's about 10 feet long. And all the family life takes place around that table. It's really, really beautiful. Wow. And it fits with the house very, very, very nicely.
What of all this has changed the way you think about design as an American who spent a lot of time in Japan now?
Well, what has been very interesting is to see the interest on the part of Americans and others from Europe, and I've even had interest from Hong Kong, etc. People seem to be ready to rethink their lifestyle a bit and to question the megalomania that's driving this phenomenon of McMansions and maximizing the size of everything. I find it very nice to be in a small little cozy room with a good book, and that book becomes my entire environment when I'm in it. And I think that kind of beautiful mental space is probably the most central requirement for really living in a small house. And I think a lot of Americans would be able to appreciate this kind of lifestyle as well.
Asby Brown runs the Future Design Institute in Tokyo. He's the author of The Very Small Home, Japanese Ideas for Living Well in Limited Space.